Today, the world is demanding more of products and packaging, especially when it comes to sustainability. In the next few episodes of Beyond the Shelf, we'll be exploring questions like, how is your company tackling regulations like extended producer responsibility? How can you meet consumer demands while keeping up with the latest trends? And how can you prepare your data and reporting to comply? We'll be exploring these questions and more with industry experts who are working every day to improve the world we live in, the products we consume, and the packaging we need to recycle. Hello, and welcome to Beyond the Shelf, the product and packaging podcast, where we interview the people behind the amazing products we use every day. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Paul Nowak, the Executive Director of Green Blue, an organization focused on advancing sustainable practices through education and collaboration. Prior to joining Green Blue as Executive Director, Paul held the role of Vice President of Sustainability at Quad. He brings 30 years of experience in the packaging industry in a variety of roles, including General Manager of Manufacturing, Senior Director of Client Experience, and Vice President of Enterprise Solutions for Brands. Nowak's passion for sustainability is demonstrated through his career accomplishments, including the creation of the first Quad Sustainable Packaging Public Report, the annual Client Sustainability Symposium, and the development of the Quad Community Education Program, according to Green Blue. He has served as a diversity, equity, inclusion DEI leader, founding the first Quad Business Resource Group for LGBTQIA plus teammates. Paul, we're so excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Laura. I'm always impressed when everyone can get all the letters in the LGBTQIA plus. So good job.
Thank you. They're all important. For those who may not be as familiar with Green Blue, I think a lot of folks are familiar with Sustainable Packaging Coalition and the conferences you guys host. Can you just give us a brief overview of Green Blue and its mission within the packaging industry?
Yeah, so Green Blue's been in existence for over 25 years. And really, if you think about Green Blue's overarching goal, it's around accelerating our transition to a just and sustainable materials economy. So that allows us to work in much of the sustainable packaging space, but also the material space and how we're going to look at circularity long term. Our work is really through membership programs. So if you start to think about theory of change, like how do we as a nonprofit do that? Different nonprofits work in different ways. So if you're used to working with other membership nonprofits, they might be working more in the consumer space or the customer space. We work in the member space. And so our membership can be large retailers, it could be brands, CPGs, it can be materials converters, it can be great organizations like SpecRite and yourselves working in the data sciences space. And that's really how Green Blue operates, is at a nonprofit top level through a number of member programs that are really specific to what the mission needs, but also what the membership needs us to do.
That's a great point. It's always so fun going to your events and conferences because you just bring together this amazing cross-section of people from, like you said, the packaging side, the brand side, the technology side. Can you talk about some of your big programs like Sustainable Packaging Coalition and How to Recycle? Because I think you guys are doing really great work here, and it would be exciting for our listeners to learn more about that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So when you think of, again, Green Blue overarching, when you have all these members, so how do you start to organize into work streams where real action can happen? And you leverage the power of this membership. So Sustainable Packaging Coalition, or SPC, has been around the longest. And really, the word coalition becomes really important there. It's thinking of bringing a coalition of people in the circular landscape together as stakeholders to solve problems in the sustainable packaging space. So some of the things we tackle are done through our collaboratives. So members can sign up for collaboratives, and then there's always a problem or an action statement. So for instance, you mentioned How to Recycle. How to Recycle 12 plus years ago did not exist. There wasn't something called How to Recycle. And at the SPC level with the members started to organize with us around this idea of, isn't it kind of ridiculous that we don't have a simple unpack instruction in North America to tell a consumer what to do with the product's packaging that they just purchased? So at the SPC level, a collaborative was formed that took probably about 2 years of work with members talking through how that could work. And the thing that I always think is interesting is they could have not come to consensus, right? Like, we've all been in business meetings or these larger group meetings. That's not easy when you have some major retailers, some major brands, converters of materials, all trying to come up with something. But what came out of that in its infancy was the How to Recycle program. So when you think about SPC, some of its solutions, whether it be How to Recycle, or we have another program called RMS, the Recycled Material Standard, they graduate out of How to Recycle when they have scope and scale and a need in the mission. So How to Recycle became our instructional program. Recycled Material Standards is right in the name. It's looking at standards for percents of recycled materials, but it's all really done through the power and action of our members. I've said this before, and I know we'll be for sure touching on legislation later. The brand members in the U.S. have done more than the government for years in this space. You know, the energy that's been coming out of brands and retailers and converters has been much larger. So harnessing that in a way so that it's not in silos, but it's safe in a pre-competitive antitrust space. So if you're going to have five major retailers or five major apparel companies all meeting in a room, they're also competitors. SPC, How to Recycle, these groups were agnostic and were pre-competitive, antitrust, no pricing conversations. What we allow to happen there, like a How to Recycle being launched, can't happen unless you have a safe space like that to really talk through it. So when you think of the members' power, I always want to come back to, like, I love our organization, but without those groups all willing to share data, share innovation, it doesn't work. And we desperately need people now more than ever to move quickly.
Yeah. I mean, first off, congratulations on all the success you guys have had as an organization. Thank you. I'm super grateful as a consumer. I take for granted that we have, recycling instructions. I can't remember a time when we didn't have them. Which
you're really young.
You can guess how I'm a millennial. But we take a lot of that for granted. And there's still so many companies that don't have recycling instructions on. And, you know, I think a lot of the consumer brands do a great job of this because, you know, as consumers, we're the ones putting it in the trash. But this applies to every industry. I mean, even if you're an industrial company, you're oftentimes using packaging from a logistics perspective, right? That still has to be recycled. There are still so many people who could be using How to Recycle. I know we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but it's just exciting to see all the traction you've had. And there's still so many folks who could be taking advantage of that fantastic program. You touched on legislation. This series is talking a lot about that. Extended producer responsibility. Let's start with that one because it's very top of mind for many companies. What are your members saying? What are you hearing about EPR from your member base?
Yeah. It's the hottest topic right now in the members. And I would take one step back and talk a little bit FTC first. So green guidelines, Federal Trade Commission green guidelines, were really the only language in the U.S. around terms like recyclable or biodegradable or claims that a brand might make. And they've been in existence for, I think, over 20 years, but they're in review right now. So that's the federal level. So up until now in the U.S., that was really all of the governance we had. And there's not a lot of meat on the bone. The language is robust in it, but there's not a lot of, like, straight data points that say, this is what an end market equals, or this is what sortation means at a certain percent. So the only real hard percent in the FTC green guidelines becomes your access percent at 60%, which means that the general population should have access to recycling for it to be called recyclable. So for many years, that is what the How to Recycle program was based on. Now, in the interim, in the last, let's say 5 years specifically, many states have started to look at extended producer responsibility or EPR laws. And so what happens there is you have the federal level, but then the state can do and always can do this, can do its own regulations and own laws, and have started to do that. So what the members, I think, are most curious, fearful about is first the unknown, Right. So for many years, we kind of understood what the FTC green guides were saying. They were a little gray in certain areas, but it wasn't really saying you must do this. And in fact, you might be charged a number for that, for the packaging. That's what's changed in extended producer responsibility. And we don't fully know what the laws are going to do yet. So in that mix, you can imagine at large organizations, there's a certain amount of trepidation and fear as they start to think about their budget cycle. So if you go like, if you're doing, you know, minimally an annual budget, but a lot of large organizations might be publicly traded and they're going out multiple years. So when they have to start thinking about, oh, there's a new law in, let's say, California, because that's one of the laws with it, and we sell a lot of our product there, and we're not sure that we can now say what we were going to say or are saying on PAC now for a claim of recyclability. And to your point, some people are not members of How to Recycle and are saying nothing. That's their first fear. They start, that's what I'm hearing from members, like, what's that going to mean? And generally, we have to say, don't be afraid. Like, I personally believe this is a good thing. Because the other piece of it is funding. So if you produce a product and it comes in packaging, you will then, it's right in the name, extended producer responsibility, you are now responsible for that. And so there will be charges, which they're still determining. So again, there's that fear again, how much are we gonna pay? What are we gonna pay for metal versus paper? How's that gonna work? So the first phase is, can you call it recyclable, truth in labeling, and how they're looking at that? But then what would the fees be at the state level? And one of the things that I find many people don't understand, I know you and your organization do, but I was just like randomly talking to someone at the farmer's market about this on Saturday. They said, well, all recycling is already run by the federal government. It's all funded. That people literally don't know that you can go from one municipality to the next municipality within your same state a few miles away and have completely different rules, completely different funding. So when people get afraid or angry that this is happening, I would more point to the fact that we don't have a great system in the U.S. and we're not funding it. The economics of that, really, people are struggling with. So when I say, I think it's a good thing and members are afraid and we have to kind of calm their fears down, it really is around this idea of how were we going to do this if not through this? We've tried for years, right? Like, so take the fear down. It will be messy for a while. I mean, I don't think there's any way around. We're in this messy middle of figuring it out. But I think members are ready for it to just start and understand it because they know it's coming. So I think many of them have kind of just resigned themselves. This is going to happen, but what are the rules of it going to be?
Yeah. And, you know, many of the folks I'm connected with who work at larger global corporations, they've been dealing with this for years. Mm-hmm. Extended producer responsibility for packaging specifically has been in Europe for a few years now. You know, they seem to be much, much faster to bringing these ideas from concept to reality. I think of like the UK plastics tax, you know, as a derivative where the UK government saying, here's how much you're paying on taxes here, you know, and people are starting to pay and calculate it. It's interesting because you really will start have to do tax planning for your packaging purchases almost. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the stakeholders in an organization? We work with a lot of packaging folks. It used to be if you were a packaging engineer, you were primarily collaborating with the R&D person, right? Like, hey, what's coming down the product pipeline? How do we need to package it? Now, packaging engineers, it sounds like, have to talk to finance and accounting. You know, how do you see that evolving?
Well, so first off, I'm really kind of happy for that. Like, so I do believe everyone has a place in the solution of sustainability and sustainable packaging. I think we need all the talent at the table. And as sustainability people, we can't be precious about, like, you know, holding people out of the discussion. So what's really happening is the finance team didn't have reason at times to be in those conversations. So they didn't necessarily spend a lot of energy on it. Now, when you have to forecast a budget for multiple years out for something you buy and a taxation or charge that you're going to get from the state, it's really changed the conversation to a point where finance is having to start to sit in those meetings and talk about, If you think of it like an actuary chart, you know, so if today you're using this much of a certain material that, say, has a higher percent charge or a tax rate in a extended producer responsibility law, they might not right away be able to move out of it, and they might recognize they're going to pay for a little while, but finance is going to want to understand, how can we start to lower that? What's the percent we can start to lower it by? How can we now fund innovation and new packaging? So if that in the past, if your return on investment for innovation wasn't there, right? And the new innovative packaging was even most likely a little more expensive. Now you have a new counterbalance weight to that equation where it's like, well, but in California, Colorado, Minnesota, we're going to be paying this. So now you have a new discussion with your finance team, and most likely they're going to be finding their packaging teams and starting to ask questions. I think the savvy companies, I think, have already started those. And to your point, modeling after the UK or modeling after the EU, it might not be apples to apples of what you're going to pay in the US, but there's no reason you couldn't start modeling the charts based on materials. And so to be clear, a material can have a different tax or cost and extended producer responsibility. There can be better or worse materials based on whether it's reusable, recyclable, how it is in the system. In the EU and the UK specifically, they've shown some of those charts already, and you can start to model off of those. So that to me is all finance language, right? Like everything we just talked through is much more finance. The other teams I think that it's been really interesting to watch start to play a part is regulatory. So having regulatory teams that end up starting to sit in conversations and understand this, I do believe much of this will be handled long-term, similar to how we saw drug facts, how we saw nutritional panels, how we saw Prop 65 information. So I think regulatory will play an important part in that. Legal teams. And then while marketing has always played a part in these discussions, it becomes a little different discussion if you're public and you're paying a tax at a certain level of what that story could sound like to a public company. So I think you're seeing marketing start to bring different stakeholders from the marketing teams into those conversations.
We'll be right back. Imagine a world without waste. Imagine if you could make products and packaging right every time. It's possible with the help of SpecRite, the first cloud-based platform for specification data management. You can track and report on material usage year over year, run LCAs with the click of a button, and comply with new packaging regulations like EPR and the UK plastics tax. Go to specrite.com/sustainability to learn more. Now back to the show.
I mean, what an exciting opportunity for packaging professionals to, again, be elevated in the organization. You know, we know that packaging is strategic because we're in the industry, but I think to your point, there's so much opportunity here. It is a little scary, but you have to just jump in.
Anything new is scary though, right? Anything new is scary.
And one of the things that we see is, you know, all the scenarios you mentioned of, you know, here's what the fee might be. And here, so many of our customers don't know the granular data of their packaging. So we often say, step one is just understand where you're at today. You know, and the easiest way to get started is to start, you know, start working with your suppliers to gather your data, start looking at your data gaps internally and mapping out how you can fill those in, because the laws are going to change. And you mentioned a really important point, especially in the United States, but also similar to the EU, where in the US, each state might have slightly different parameters. And so, you know, what we see is a lot of companies are realizing the need to manage dynamic packaging data so that they can respond to whatever state requirement there is for reporting, to whatever international different country requirements. How else do you think, you know, companies can get started and start to just overcome that inertia of unknowing? Because there's no one person that knows everything about sustainability, and that's a challenge.
No. I want to pull on that data thread for a minute here, because I think it's a really important point from a standpoint of fear. So we keep going back to fear. Like, we're people at the end of the day. So you're afraid of a change that you don't control. So it's not in your control and you don't have all the facts. So in that case, what I find is taking the actions in your control generally will take you out of that fear and build momentum so that you're as ready as you can be as these things are decided. So as you start to think about your data, that to me is such a in your control piece of the puzzle that maybe because you didn't have to, you haven't been managing it at the level you should. And so to me, that's one of the first steps of like, do I understand my portfolio? And do I understand like, so, and you know this, but your audience might not fully know all this. So many people in our industry, when they look at a bill of materials or a specification, it's for the product. So if you're selling cereal and you're selling, you know, you're selling this type of cereal, you're not selling the box and the bag. You know, so it, the final product is what many times is being sold and tracked. So if you can't break that down to a sales level to say this piece of packaging is being sold when I sell this SKU in a store, that's a great place to start. Just and I would tell you there's lots of pluses outside of even extended producer responsibility for when you look at like your setting your goals for reduction. That just having that data as a key performance indicator to be able to track it is a really good place to start. I think the next thing to your point of like, no one can know all of this. So again, if you're making cereal, like your job is to make amazing cereal. Like I don't know how to make cereal. You wouldn't want me to make the cereal, right? But like, I know this company makes amazing cereal. Why would we think they're going to have people who are good at all these things we just talked to? But there's teams, there's people like, obviously you could join SPC, you can become part of our conversations, you could engage with SpecWrite. There's many, many different groups that are doing great work in this space. So what I say is, so once you start to organize foundationally your data, think about what are the important strategic partnerships so that you don't have to be in this alone. And then really pick a couple to start. Don't do a bunch. Pick a couple to start that say, who can help us in this space, and really get busy on the work. Like, what can we do today to be ready for this? So to me, those are my two big things. Like, get your house in order internally and then find great partners. Don't expect to be able to be an expert at everything.
Yeah, that's a great point. No, none of us are out here doing it alone. I want to, you know, pull on that thread of innovation and data. We're really excited to have a partnership with How to Recycle. And to your point, you know, when you start managing your packaging specifications at that DNA level, doing other things gets so much easier. And it's not just the reporting aspect. Our integration will allow people, I think you guys ask 60 questions to determine the recyclability of packaging. And so if you're managing your data in SpecWrite, you're starting to have a dynamic data stream where we can feed that data and come back and say, here's what the label is. And that's a game changer. Can you talk a little bit about the pain you were hearing from members around that and why you guys are excited about this partnership too, as much as we are?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think about How to Recycle, how it started, it was a grassroots members program. And so when it started, we had a couple members, really great members, obviously, but not, you know, a ton of uptake. It was learning. Well, over the last 12 years, we're 800 plus brands now who use it. And so all of that during this whole time has been done by humans on the How to Recycle team, amazing humans who I'm lucky to call friends on our team, but humans nonetheless. And so what members were saying to us was, we want to operationalize this in a different way. Like, is there ways we can start to look at continuous improvement from a work stream to get these specifications in the How to Recycle system accurately, faster, use the different technologies? And also, many of them are holding the data that How to Recycle needs in different parts of different systems in their organization. So as I started to think about that, I thought, like I said earlier, we can't be all things to everyone and shouldn't try to be at How to Recycle, but we have some amazing members who are really good in this space. Why not partner with kind of the best and the best in the space? So we did pick a few that we considered the best of the best. SpecWrite was one. So we're excited to have that connection with you. And the gist of it, I think, from the member standpoint is, can we have open ability for specs to flow into how to recycle if we already have them in a different system, in this case, SpecRite, without losing the credibility of the how to recycle doing its assessment. So what SpecRite had done, and I don't think I knew this, I've known this for a few years, and so thanks for doing it. It was smart. It's a huge compliment to how to recycle. You've already built in a bunch of the same questions because you knew your clients were going to be asked those by how to recycle. So it's an elegant solution in some ways to say, like, why can't we just move faster by doing this and not think we have to be all things to everyone?
Yeah, no, we're excited. And nothing excites me more than seeing packaging people see it in action. And they're like, oh my gosh, yes, because we have this consumer technology in our lives and we can order an Uber, we can get DoorDash, like these amazing things that connect us to goods and people instantly. And I love that we're bringing those type of solutions to the packaging world, right? Where if you want to know the how to recycle label, it's going to take you a few minutes, right? And you're going to have an idea of the answer. And those things are really exciting, especially as we see the pace of packaging change increase, where people are going to be developing different types of packaging and want to test different types of packaging and do more scenario-based planning. And so, you know, data really is power here. And we're excited to make that, like you said, a seamless flow. I hear you're launching a new campaign for how to recycle. I'd love for you to share more with everyone what that's about.
We are. Thank you for asking. So how to recycle is really, you know, going to its next level of influence. It's done so much already. And I think there's just a lot more for it to do. So it's called How to Recycle Forward, overarchingly, and it has multiple pillars. One is what we're talking about today, which is operational excellence and how to work through that piece. Another one is the brand refresh that we see coming. So working with the recycling partnerships, RecycleCheck, working with other databases to allow How to Recycle to be a scannable dynamic label. But then the third piece that I'm really excited about is looking at a multi-year national campaign, or similar to like a checkoff campaign, if you think of Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute, to start to really look at consumer behavior change. One of the things our data has shown and our members have told us, the how to recycle unpack instruction is so important, but it has to do so much of the lift. Like, we're asking it to do too much of the lift in consumer behavior change without explaining to the consumers in this world what it can do. It's built brand equity from a standpoint of consumers knowing it, seeing it. Like you said, you don't remember a time without it. But that by itself is not enough to get to behavior change. And if you connect a lot of the dots, extended producer responsibility programs also will have sections of them that funding should be going to consumer behavior change. So if you do everything perfectly in the innovation space and you make this new material that's recyclable, but the consumer doesn't behave the way you want, do you blame the consumer or do you meet them where they live and educate them? So the idea of the national education campaign is how to recycle will be put into a space where the label plus an app, the label plus a billboard, the label plus a commercial starts to get people to understand it better and then have the change we need. So as innovation and labels change and instructions, they know how to work with it. If you talk to consumers, there's just this high level of frustration still of not understanding like what the real rules are of it, even with the label. So I think instead of being, I hear a lot of people kind of just annoyed by that. They're like, well, consumers should know better. We've done all this, but have we really? Like, I would challenge that we really haven't met them at the level of like, if you talk to people. So if I say, just do it, what's the brand that did that work?
Nike.
That took a second, right? Because they had a whole campaign. So why wouldn't we have a whole campaign for, and in this case, how to recycle, that gets you that? That's what we're looking to do. And I do think it's our responsibility to do it. We're selling things into the world as brands. It's the responsibility of us to help educate the consumer in that space.
Yeah. And I feel like the time is now because, when I go to, I'll just use Starbucks as an example. When I go to Starbucks, there's three trash cans now. There's organic, recycled. So I really do see the change happening. It really is just connecting the dots. And so it really is exciting to see initiatives like this that I believe will do just that. You know, as we look to the future, you're obviously at the forefront working with so many leaders in this space. What do you see as future trends in packaging sustainability and regulatory?
So I do think it'll be interesting as we start to see extended producer responsibility numbers modeled, like we talked about. I believe that is what you'll see drive behavior. So innovation first, as companies say, well, if we need to move from one thing to another, how are we going to do that? So we called out at the Sustainable Packaging Coalition this year already, paperization as a major trend, because we're seeing, I want to be clear, well-managed paper. So paper with a chain of custody and not just randomly purchased paper products. We're seeing new uses for those like flexible fibers, different types of envelopes. So we're seeing many new innovations there, in part because I think people are anticipating paper will have a lower taxation or a lower cost. So that's for sure a trend I would continue to watch. And I think I'm excited by it, but I also think we have to look around corners for unintended consequences to just make sure we're not, you know, if we're looking at PFAS and coatings the right way. And again, in specifications, you can start to check, like, what does this have as a coating? What doesn't it have as a coating? Because they're not equal. So that, to me, that becomes the first piece. The other part of the conversation that I think I would say is part of the COVID pandemic and also just the power of recycling, what's been happening in recycling. So much of the conversation, technology and innovation has been focused on recyclability. I do believe we're going to start to see a swing back to compostables and reusables. And I'm already seeing that. You mentioned Starbucks. They are piloting, you know, the programs. If you haven't seen them, for the rinsing stations, I don't know if you've tried it yet. So they give you, they have little holders with handles. You put your cup in it, they pull it in, they fill it for you. So they're, I believe they will pull it off at scale. I travel, so I've been in multiple cities doing it now. So I think reusables in the right space, you're going to see innovation towards that. I would also say really looking at the compostable landscape seriously, because compostable, I think a lot of people don't understand, like industrial compostable versus organic or backyard compostable. But the space of industrial compostable, there's lots of energy there. And then probably the final one that is fair, it can be controversial to a certain extent, but advanced in chemical recycling in the plastic space, a number of large organizations have put goals forward to build new facilities to do advanced recycling or chemical recycling. Those are all ones we have to watch. They were all happening. But again, if we go back to extended producer responsibility, now there's this other thing with a real number to it, with dollars, that are going to force people to say, okay, that finance person, what are we doing here? And now you have like this list of what are the solutions we should put towards it. I think, again, everyone was looking at it, but it wasn't, the urgency that you're seeing now is very different.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, you know, we've talked about federal and state regulations. I know that the SEC has been floating climate disclosure. Do you think that's another area that's going to continue to gain traction?
Yes. I mean, so what I believe will happen there, and we're in a political season, so, you know, we could see what happens at post-election. But what I believe is going to happen there is the power of what we're seeing with extreme weather. It's very hard for even, I would say, people who I'm close with who have denied climate change for many years, or businesses that just didn't comment on it. It's becoming much harder to ignore extreme weather. And so notice I say extreme weather, not climate change. So extreme weather of a flood or a storm or heat that, you know, that we're seeing in the US, that's the piece that is then tied directly to climate, that is tied directly to carbon. That's where I think that's going to come from. And you already see companies kind of seeing it coming, that there's no way around it. We've passed, unfortunately, a tipping point on climate. And so we're going to have to address it and claw back as much as we can. But I do really think the extreme weather piece of even running your organization, like, so we're getting ready for SPC Advance in Chicago. So I'm super excited about that. And I'm not going to spoil too much, but one of the speakers I'm interviewing works on climate migration, specific in the US. So think about that as a brand or a company. If I say I can't produce anymore in a certain amount of part of the country because the amount of air conditioning I need isn't supported by the grid in that state, that all will go tied into this carbon disclosure. So unfortunately, I don't think people will do it without a significant amount of pain, but we're starting to see the pain through extreme weather.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, pivoting, I know you all at SPC have recently launched a diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative. I'm personally very excited about it. Why is it so important to bring diverse voices at the table when it comes to packaging sustainability?
Yeah, thank you for asking me about it. So there's two main reasons that we're focused on, but it's a big topic. But for today's conversation, I'd say one, communities, people who have been marginalized and, you know, kept out of the conversation are generally the ones seeing the worst impacts of waste, of climate change, of all the different things that we've been talking through. So it's not equal. Like financial, like we were just talking about migration. So say you live in an area that eventually, because of sea rise coming up, you're going to sell your house and move. Many people can't afford to do that. Certain communities cannot afford to do that. And so those communities are not being represented equally to the percent of this effect. So when you start to think of it that way, and then say you're coming up with a new innovation, you need scale for a new innovation. So if I say I want to do reuse now, I think reuse is one of the answers, and this is what we're going to do. How do you get to all the communities for consumer behavior change if you're only talking to the top 1% or 2% and you're not meeting them necessarily where they live culturally? So one of the things we discussed was immigration and different communities of immigrants that come to the U.S. are much more used to reuse because where they were raised, reuse was seen culturally as a positive. So from that standpoint, there's a real chunk of the community that we need to elevate. The other piece is, as we think about the challenge of and the scope of this problem we have. So let's not fool ourselves. Like everyone's doing great work and I'm a positive guy, but there's some real problems that we're facing with climate, extreme weather, waste. When I think of communities that have been marginalized, who have been discriminated against, who've had to solve problems just to survive. So one of the examples I give, out gay man, grew up with HIV and AIDS in the world. Many people were dying when I was in my early 20s. There was no cure. There was no test, even. When I first, so you just hoped and thought you'd probably die. Well, the community got galvanized and got busy and worked with the FDA and at times, you know, were activists to get the FDA to change how medications were approved and the timeline and the speed for them. So a community like that that's been marginalized and held back had to fight on their own without a lot of help to get these laws changed. And then we benefited from COVID when the COVID vaccine came through. Because that law had been changed, because the FDA had new protocols to fast track medications, we now benefit from that. That's the thinking I want at the table. You know, so, and then you could go to women in the workplace and the struggles women have had. You know that probably much better than I'm ever going to know it, like what you've had to possibly do in your lifetime. You could talk, we talk to members from the Black community. We talk to members from the disabled community. They've had to solve problems just to survive. That's the creative thinking we want at the sustainability table. Frankly, I want all. So I'm a older white guy also. So I mean, I don't want to hold anyone on the table, but I want to invite in these groups very specifically to say, how would you solve this? From a perspective of a group that maybe has never been fully asked that, but also has had to problem solve just for survival.
That's a great point. And I'm so excited. I've gotten to know some other folks in the community, and you're right. And one of the things I appreciate is you're building a bigger table. And sometimes that is the solution, right? It takes all the voices and all the perspectives to solve some of the world's biggest challenges, sustainability being one of them. I, like you, am an optimist. I see all the great work being done. I certainly see the challenges, but I know we're on the right track. You know, do you have any other advice or things you want people to know about the work that you're doing or what you're seeing in the space?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I talk about this a lot, the idea of choosing courage over fear. And I know for some people, it's like, I want to talk about the specifications. We could talk about the specifications. You know, this isn't like woo-woo stuff. But I feel like being an optimist and being courageous is one piece of the puzzle that we don't talk about enough. Like, we don't recognize that this can be very overwhelming. Whether you don't know where your specs are and you're afraid to admit to your boss that you have no idea some of your specifications, like, that might not be a great conversation. Whether it is just you see extreme weather happening and you don't feel like you're being part of the solution. So choosing courage, like, on a daily basis, on a minute-to-minute basis, and then connecting that to action. So to me, that's the magic, right? Like, so first off, I'm not going to pretend it's easy to choose courage. Like, it can be very difficult. If you are on a feed and you're looking at some of the news and you're going down certain rabbit holes on Instagram or different apps, that can be difficult. But like, I would say to everyone, as you have fear around the unknown of these topics, as you have fear around diversity, equity, inclusion, and new people's perspectives, choose courage, but then take the action. And the action could be reach out and find a partner that can help you. Talk to a community you've never talked to before about these problems. Like, take an action that you're a little afraid of and do those together. I would bet money you'll feel better. And when you feel better, that energy that's released builds momentum towards the solutions we all need. So to me, that's what I would say to people, like, on a daily basis, really look at your emotional state and say, am I being courageous today?
Paul, I really appreciate that advice. You're someone who inspires me. I'm excited to see what you guys continue to have in store. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all your wisdom. How can people follow you and the work that you're doing at Green Blue?
Yeah, I mean, so greenblue.org definitely is a great place for you to go. We're on all the apps. I'm sure as this goes out, you'll tag us and put those through. D.com is out there. So tons of places, the normal places you would look, you could find us.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Paul, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Beyond the Shelf is presented by SpecRite, the first cloud-based platform for specification management. Say goodbye to spreadsheets, share drives, and legacy systems, and digitize your specs in a secure single source of truth. With SpecRite, you can easily share and collaborate on specs with other departments and across your entire supply chain network. Taking a spec-first approach enables you to accelerate product and packaging development, go to bid faster, report on sustainability, and ultimately spend less time chasing data and more time making amazing things. To learn more, visit specrite.com. That's SPECRIGHT.com.